talking dickheads, dreaming about a Premiership Cup. We love our clubs, but they never win two flags in 100 years.
The shit house.
If you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
It is Tuesday, August 27th. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
And my name is Charlie Clawson. And Will, you are the dog who got the cream.
How does Charlie, you've come in strong with Bulldog jokes, because just before we started, we were checking if we were ready to go. And as is always asked of me, do I have a beverage? Because I always realize at the last moment that I need to have a sip of my beverage. And I've said, I do have a beverage. And you said, sign in for another 3 years. And I was like, wow, we haven't even started recording yet. And Charlie is on fire. It's like you've spent a weekend writing jokes about the Bulldogs and you've come right out of the blocks on fire, much like the Bulldogs on the weekend in Ballarat.
Well, part of me was, look, I wanted you to win. You're my friend and I like the Bulldogs, but part of me was going, oh, wouldn't this be a great podcast if you guys had lost? If like, if you guys had done a West Coast and just stumbled at the vinyl hurdle, it would have been an entertaining podcast, but I imagine the next 4 weeks would be kind of not that fun.
Oh, and particularly rubbing the salt in the wounds that it would be Hawthorn. Yeah. Of course it would be. Yeah. Fucking Hawthorn. Just when you thought you were out, they'd fucking get you again. Like, of course it would be Hawthorn. Alistair Clarkson, who day by day morphs into Kevin Sheedy.
Yeah.
Like, just has... He just is amazing. I mean, the players don't get the credit they probably deserve because they're the ones who actually, you know, go out there and execute the game plan and do those sort of things. But... Hawthorn's season, there's just so much to... I hate it because I don't want to like Hawthorn. Mm. You know, you don't want to be happy for Hawthorn. They've had enough success. They don't need strangers being happy for them. They're happy by themselves, right? But there's just so much to admire about the way they went about it this season, I think.
Are Hawthorn a bit like Tom Cruise in the sense that, like, they come up and everyone's like, oh, this... person's great, we're into Tom Cruise, and then they're so successful and so good at everything that you're like, hang on, we're a bit over Tom Cruise, and then they just come full circle again where you're like, you know what, I really like Tom Cruise. Is that Hawthorn?
Yeah, and much like Tom Cruise, they've always been pretty successful.
Yeah,
like they'll have a couple of years where they're not quite as successful, but they'll have some big hit movie again in a couple of years. Like, yeah, they are definitely the Tom Cruise, and they still look the same. They still look as young and fit as they ever did.
It's weird. And then, you know, if they get Cogs next year, then who knows? Like, this is the thing, is they, it's almost like it is worth them just dipping out of the finals just for a little bit so they can get at some higher draft picks, maybe get a better negotiating position at the trade table or whatever, get everyone off their guard, and then they'll fly back into the finals the following year.
Well, I mean, I guess they unexpectedly finished high on the ladder last year. And no one really thought, I don't know, is this a weird thing to say? But I think they finished like fourth or whatever last season. And they finished ninth or whatever it is this season. Ninth or tenth, whatever. But, you know, just out of the eight. So ninth probably. It feels like they had a better season this season than they had last season.
Well, yeah, because they had less good players this season as well. Yeah. They had more adversity. But it's also, so the thing about Hawthorn is, it's like they're like horror villains from the 80s, like Jason Voorhees or Freddy or whatever. They don't ever really die. They just sort of go away for a little bit, and then they come back and slaughter a whole bunch of new teenagers.
Oh, Clarko would be... He'd be a great serial killer in a serial killer movie. If he just gets bored with, like, winning premierships in football teams and he decides, like, in the next stage of his career to become a serial killer, that would be not off-brand for Clarko. And you'd back him in to be the best serial killer there's ever been.
Mindhunter Series 3. They interview Alistair Clarkson.
Alistair Clarkson.
He just busts
or
out his guitar.
Or just gets to the point where, like, his football genius drives him insane and he has to go into one of those mentoring roles. He can no longer coach because of how bananas, like, you know, he's a football genius. And so the new coach has the go down and they find him Hannibal Lecter style, like, you know, in the cell all alone. You know, he has to be strapped up and they just wheel him out to address the players.
Well, they say like Chris Fagan is probably the most likely to get coach of the year just from the jump that the Lions have taken. But if you look at the individual wins that Hawthorn have had this year and the way in which he is coached, like the GWS game, the West Coast game, if you took it on individual performances rather than a cumulative total of wins, you'd have to say that Clarko probably should win coach of the year again, right?
Right. He's such a good coach. Like, I mean, and just his influence throughout the league with all the other coaches and the intrigue level that puts into games now. And yeah, it's, it did not crush me that it crushed Hawthorn fans. Put it that way. You know, like there would be other teams that you might feel a bit more sorry for if they'd gone over there and had that win and then you knocked them out of the finals. But yeah, with Hawthorn, you're like, you'll be right, mate.
Yeah, wait like, 2 years.
You shake hands and you go, you'll be right.
Yeah.
You'll be okay, mate.
I mean, I think the worst aspect of that win is that enabled Collingwood to get back into the top four. Like, that was the biggest gift. I mean, I don't know what the Hawthorn-Collingwood rivalry is like, if there is much of a rivalry, but that was a huge gift to them.
Is there any... could it be a strategy by West Coast? Have we left this unexplored? Because Collingwood are at their most dangerous, as we have surmised on this podcast many times, when their backs are against the wall. They get Stevenson back for the finals. De Goey will be back. They're up and going again. Get him into the top four. You drop out. Their backs aren't against the walls anymore, and that's when they're at their most vulnerable.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially, but I don't know. I mean, I just feel like this could be... This is the moment that West Coast completely shot themselves in the foot. Like, I think, because do you get the feeling that maybe they rested players or they took it a bit easy? They felt like they were going to just win this game at home. They took it a bit easy.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. And I think
that, yeah, go on.
I just also think having that one hand in the Premiership Cup because they got last year's just makes you a little bit complacent, just a little bit complacent.
It's hard to know, isn't it? Like, final rounds are like first rounds in that weird things happen.
Mm.
That's what kind of made me most nervous going into Sunday's game was just that thought that weird things happen, you know? It's the final round and we've had a pretty good run going into the finals. Adelaide really don't have much to gain out of the game. What if it's one of those ones that just unexpectedly goes in the other direction? Mm. I was glad that wasn't the case. I was glad that, like, this feels like to me, for a Bulldogs fan, that regardless of what happens in the finals, this feels like a win to me. We had the youngest team in the league on the weekend, and for us to kind of, you know, have this momentum. Like, when we were 4-7 at the bye, like, and we were thinking about giving up this podcast forever.
Were we?
Well, it was only the Saints' good form that was keeping us going, I think, at that point. So
a big
dips of my lid to Richo for keeping my interest in football this season because it's really paid off in the end. But we've come home strong. This is really exciting. The fact that we've even made the finals, that we needed to win and then we did go out and win, gives you a lot of confidence that, you know, at least going into next season, even if we don't get it done this season. But it also means that going into the finals, you do get that feeling of just going, well, they've got momentum. They're playing really good football, the Bulldogs. It's unlikely. It's a surprise to me as much as it is to anybody else, but it's exciting.
I'd be disappointed, though, if you went out against GWS. I mean, the amount of momentum you have and the hype around you guys and the form that, like, your best players are in at the moment, like, I would be disappointed with anything less than a preliminary final. You meditate 1 week at a time, but do you remember, was it 3 years ago when Essendon sort of barnstormed their way into the finals and they played that first final in Sydney and they got absolutely smacked at the SCG? And it was this real anti-climax. It was like, oh, you were the kind of in-form young team coming in. And I think it took the wind out of their sails and they haven't ever really quite recovered from that. Even this final series, you sort of, Essendon feel like, well, if... them and GWS feel the most vulnerable. So I think that for the Bulldogs, if the Giants were able to put you away this week, I still think it would feel a bit like a wasted chance.
I don't think so. Because I do think that, I would say a third of our team is a couple of seasons away from being the sort of team that you'd look at and go, they're a premiership team. But who knows? Maybe their style and maybe their enthusiasm and maybe those things all work. GWS at their best are a really, really good team. And with Cameron back, they're a much better team. And, like, you know, you worry about that idea that because you've beaten a team so easily, you know, a few weeks before, maybe your expectations that you'll be able to do it again. But I think they'll have a crack. It's exciting. I actually feel like we've got nothing to lose. I feel like everything from now on is bonus.
It's a little bit of a danger game. I mean, GWS got the perfect tune-up game before the finals. They got to play the Suns. They got some confidence back. Cameron, you know, wins the Coleman. They get a few more games into their returning stars. So there is a little bit of a danger element. I was talking to a mate on the weekend, he's a Saints supporter, about Ross Lyon. And he was sort of asking where, you know, you think Ross could go. And I'd spoken about the podcast, how we thought Melbourne. And then we're talking about how, you know, Ross don't do rebuilds. And then the obvious choice that we didn't discuss was GWS. I mean, it makes sense, right? Like if they have a disappointing exit from the finals, they've still got all those awesome players, which is what Ross does, is he goes into clubs that have awesome lists and then applies that hard edge. Could you see Ross going to GWS?
Yeah, I guess I could. I think Leon Cameron's done a pretty good job. And I think it'd be disappointing if he doesn't get to see it through. But, you know, I think there comes a time that if you don't have success that they might look in a different direction. I don't know. Yeah, I guess if they lost badly to the Bulldogs, you know, they might start asking the question around, well, you know, where's the future for this team? But if I don't know. It feels to me that GWS have had to overcome a lot this season. And, you know, they've still managed to, like, they won a game more than the Bulldogs. They finished above us on the ladder. At their best, you know, they probably have the right to think that they can beat us, you know, in the final.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like the longer the GWS go without actually getting anything, the greater the pressure is. So I reckon the more jumpy the administrations are going to be. I feel like they've moved on too many coaches already. I feel like the Suns have moved on too many coaches already, considering how long it takes to go for a team to gel. I mean, the Suns are a completely different story. I felt like, I mean, I've talked about Kane Corns being a twerp on this podcast before, but what a twerp. He is a twerp. There he was, like, slamming the Suns players for, like, celebrating Mad Monday. And he's like, you know, you've lost 18 games in a row. What are you celebrating? It's like, mate, like, give them a break. They've lost 18 games in a row.
Do you not understand what we're celebrating? That it's over.
Over.
That we don't have to play again next weekend. Like, Hawthorn, they're having a nice, like, end of the year. Pat each other on the back. Don't have to work for a few more weeks. My job is a nightmare. Yeah. Every day I go to work, it's a nightmare. We're terrible at football. And now finally, it's over. Let me have a beer, motherfucker.
But what, I mean, what
you
was
motherfucking
he,
twerp.
What was he going for? Like, what would he have liked to have seen from the Suns on Mad Monday? Like, them back at training, they've got the balls out?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
ridiculous.
That's right, yeah. People are like, do they not understand how the schedule works?
They can't even do Mad Monday right.
Maybe Gold Coast. That'd be great if they trained on that Monday and they went down and asked Stewie Jew and he goes, we're playing next weekend.
Yeah.
And they just play in the bye weekend.
Yeah.
And so they get a win. They play just them.
I'd love if Tony Cochran just installs that Mad Monday. Once the year is done and dusted, that's when they train hard. And then when it gets into the season proper, that's when they do Mad Monday. Season proper, every Monday is Mad Monday. We hit the strip. We go nuts, put on some costumes. Look, someone's dressed like Khaleesi.
That's not the worst idea. Get a bit of fun back into football. Every Monday's Mad Monday at the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, I mean, you get some players up there. They've got player retention problems. Imagine if you could say to a player, look, we're not going to win many games, but every Mad Monday is Mad Monday when the season's on. Look, you've got to train really hard once the season's over.
Yeah, but every Monday is a Mad Monday. You know what you get up here? Costumes. Mad Monday.
It's the Costanza approach. You should do the opposite of everything you have done prior to now.
How about this as an idea for the bye week in between the regular season and the finals? At the moment, we have the EJ Witten Legends match. I say, for charity because a bit of interest's gone out of that game and it's not raising the money it once was and blah, blah, blah. How about in an exhibition match at the MCG, the team that finishes 18th on the ladder has to play a team made up of like EJ Witten-style All-Stars to see who wins the game.
Yeah,
so you get to see the current day Gold Coast Suns playing against like a team of recently retired or even like retired for ages legends.
So any team that finishes last has to play the best of the retired greats.
Yeah.
Love it. I love it because I reckon that Gold Coast are a chance to lose that game.
They would.
I should, worth mentioning, we're talking last week, we had a listener contact us to say that Nick Revolt was on the couch last week and was taking pot shots at Rhys Stanley. And then we had another listener message us after that episode went out saying, well, no, in fact, Nick Revolt was boosting Rhys Stanley, saying that they need to bring him in. And the reason he was dropped, he was out of form. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I don't know that that is boosting Rhys Stanley.
No, it's not. It's giving with one hand and taking with the other.
It's a backhanded compliment. It's like they have no other choice. You have no choice to bring that guy in.
Yeah, basically what he's saying is, what Geelong need is a Rhys Stanley type, but Rhys Stanley is shit. Rhys Stanley's not good enough to be Rhys Stanley in my books.
I went to the football this weekend. I went to see the Swans and the Saints game. Buddy's 300, last game for McVeigh and Kieran Jack.
How was it? Apart from the result.
It was the hottest I've ever been at the football in my life. Like, I can't remember what the temperature was. It's probably about 25. Sunny day in Sydney, but it felt like it was 30. And I just didn't... Have you ever gone to the football, not in a preseason game or early in the season, thinking maybe I should wear some sunscreen? Like, it's not a consideration I've ever thought is like, oh, the sun might be hot today. So there's a bunch of my friends, we're sitting on the wing on the first level, so not under the alcove. And you know how the sun, like literally for a 1 o'clock game, the sun is right in your eyes, like it's just above the members stand. And it was excruciating. Like watching the football was bad enough, but the light coming into my eyes, by the last quarter, I had my jacket pulled over my head like I was a vampire in Buffy trying to escape the sun. It was so goddamn hot.
Well, is this the sort of thing that when they talk about the conditions over in Western Australia or playing up north, you know, like, is it going to be, so for the Brisbane playing, who did Brisbane play up there? Richmond. Mm. So Richmond have to go up and play in Brisbane in a couple of weeks. Mm. Like, is that going to be really hot? Is there a chance that the conditions up there will be boiling hot?
Well, I think so. What was the game last week where it was at the MCG with Geelong and was it West Coast and Richmond where it was Sunday afternoon in Melbourne, it was really sunny and half a dozen players could not see the ball. Like they're all shielding the sun out of their eyes as they're going for the ball. But this was just, I actually was looking around at these Sydney Swan supporters going like, do you do this every week? I'm used to Etihad. I'm like a roof over my head. I've become spoiled. This is unbearable. That big ball of light in the sky is killing me. But it was good to see.
I know technically this is still an outdoor sport, but...
Yeah. Can we do something about that light?
Could you do something about like the weather and the climate?
It was a good game. I mean, it was good. I'm happy to see those players get... I have nothing against the Sydney Swans. They're one of those teams that I've always kind of liked, and especially that kind of crop of players. That's the would you still think that they fit in the no dickhead era of the Sydney Swans? They sneak in. I mean, I classify that as pre Kurt Tippett, so they're all pre Kurt Tippett, right? Not that Kurt Tippett's a dickhead, but I think something shifted in the Swans, you know, after Kurt Tippett in terms of their recruiting strategy. Before it used to be
there was a no dickheads policy, and then there was a look may contain traces of dickheads policy.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you know, we try not to put any dickheads in, but occasionally, you know, it might be prepared in the same kitchen as a dickhead.
Well, it was just one of those games where we actually were all over them for two quarters. Our kicking the last few years has been atrocious. At one stage, In the first quarter, they were five straight and we were one goal. We were one goal six. And I'm like, this is going to hurt when you're away, like when you can't silence the crowd. And then we actually managed to get level pegging at halftime, had the first four scoring shots of the third quarter and kicked 1-3. And I'm like, wow. And then after that, the emotion of the day took over and you could sort of sense, and look, I'm not casting dispersions on the Saints players, but I kind of got the sense that when, you know, you see Jared McVay get dished off the ball and kick a goal and the crowd goes crazy, and then Kieran Jack gets dished off the ball, that as the opposition, you're like, well, am I going to be the asshole that fucking runs down Kieran Jack, you know, like on the wing, you know, and embarrasses in front of all these people? Like, you know, maybe it was a final or something, but this is a dead rubber game and this is a guy's farewell game. Maybe I won't chase just as hard.
Yeah, it's like the person who tries too hard in the EJ Witten match.
Yeah.
It's all for fun, mate. Like, yeah. You don't put a hard tag on someone in the EJ Witten. And it's the same in the final game. Well, Clarko was famous for being the spoil sport, right? In when Fev was trying to kick 100 goals.
Yeah.
And Clarko, like, fluttered back into the back line or whatever.
Was because like, nah, Clarko is a serial killer.
Because I'm the greatest coach ever, and I'm going to spoil your day, and then I'm going to become a serial killer. The world's greatest serial killer. Clarko, you're still on the phone.
It was interesting watching Brett Ratton's press conference afterwards because I think it's actually the most honest I've seen a Saints coach. Well, Richo seemed always so nice. He didn't ever really come out and like pot anyone. But Brett Ratton basically just came out and said, well, look, the skills in this team are deplorable. Like he said, it's not about kicking under pressure. Like you understand if someone has bad skills under pressure, but we can't kick under no pressure. And so what we're going to have to do is... like.
He said, did you see that video of that guy that I gave a game? I told him if he kicked a goal, he got his senior game. And he missed from like 8 meters out. And we posted it to shame him on the internet because no one at this club can fucking kick. I couldn't drop him. I couldn't leave him out because everybody else missed their kicks at fucking goal as well. It's atrocious.
But he was saying, like, we're going to... if you can't kick... then we're going to have to either bring players in who can kick or you're going to have to learn how to kick. And it's like, isn't that like a fundamental in the drafting process when you're doing like your player analysis is like, must be able to kick is a game that requires kicking.
Well, they say the problem is that, you know, you learn bad habits like as a kid. This is why the recruits to the game often end up being quite good kicks because they don't have... yeah, the habits they picked up from some dad at Auskick when they were 4 years old and who thought he knew everything about how to kick a football or whatever. And so maybe the problem at St Kilda is maybe, hey guys, the problem with this preseason, Brett Ratton says, is going to be a bunch of operations. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? We don't have injuries. And then he just brings out a cricket bat and starts breaking each of their legs so that they can
mafia
rebuild
style.
Their legs and their kicking action.
Well, they had to teach Cyril how to run properly. Remember that?
Right.
He kept popping his hamstrings, so they brought in some like biomechanics expert to say, you're going to have to learn how to run. So just bring in someone to teach us how to kick. I mean, I honestly don't know. Maybe the problem is it's the balance of the players we have. Like, we've got a lot of good inside, tough, grunt, in and under players, but we don't have a lot of that silk. Apparently, we're chasing Brad Hill quite hard. I think that could be a good get for us, but it's just... it's nothing more dispiriting than watching, like, you know, three or four players streaming into the 50 and they'll either miss a target or have a shot and miss everything. I think it says a lot about where our club's midfield is at, that Dan Hannaby was best on ground for us on Saturday. And he's only played like four games of football this year. They said his body was rebuilt this year and he's managed to come in four games and be our best midfielder. I think that's pretty damn...
well, he was the test case. He was the test case of the you've got to break him before you make him. And so he didn't actually have an injury when he got to St Kilda. In fact, that's why they got him. All the other clubs were like, oh, I wouldn't take him. But St Kilda fancy themselves as like guys who do up old cars. Yeah. And they're like, no. I can turn this into something. I can pimp my ride.
I love that. I'm just getting, you know, that scene in from The Untouchables where Al Capone is talking about how much he loves baseball.
Yeah.
Walking back and forth. So it's like... I imagine Brett Ratton has his exit meeting. And so you go and sit down at his desk. There's a cricket bat on the desk. And he gets up and he's like, you know what I like about cricket? It's a team sport. It's a team sport that requires skill. Because if you don't have skill, you can't play the sport. You know what I mean? Snap. Just whacks it down across the leg. Now get out of here. You're in surgery. Radical preseason from the St Kilda Football Club. 42 players are listed with broken legs.
He just pushes a like he breaks their leg with the cricket bat and then he pushes. No, he breaks their leg with the one St Kilda Premiership cup. So he gets it out and it's sitting on his desk and he gets them to touch the, and then he breaks their legs and he just pushes across the desk a rehab schedule. He said, this is your pre-season plan.
Did you see any of the Collingwood Essendon game?
Oh, just before we go to that, I was going to say the Bulldogs game that the kicking, we were terrible, you know, kicks, particularly early in the season, and particularly terrible kicks at goal. And heaps of the success that we're having now is just based on the fact that we're kicking better at goal. Mm. It's such a huge game changer when you can actually kick accurately. So the big worry of the Bulldogs.
What did they change? Broke their legs.
I can't see what they changed. I assume it's like they're getting the ball in better positions or it's, you know, or I don't know. Maybe they're just kicking better at goal, but they're just playing better.
Nick Del Santo had a theory. He was on the Fox Footy podcast and he was talking about, he thinks that the difference is it's a generational thing. That when we were younger, like people of our vintage, in summer it was cricket, in winter it was football. So, you know, we didn't have as many video games and iPhones and all that kind of stuff. So as a kid, you would always walk around with like either a cricket bat in your hand or a footy in your hand. And so you're constantly practicing kicking for goal or kicking the ball or kicking to your mates or whatever. Whereas now you've got a bunch of kids who sort of like, well, when they're at training or when they are playing, they'll kick a footy. But they've got a lot of other stuff to choose from. Millennials.
Wow.
Avocado on toast and not enough footy in their hands.
Too busy eating their avo, their smashed avo, to bloody kick a footy around. Too busy playing Fortnite on their Wii. This will be another satisfying segment for all the people who messaged me to say that it was called eSports, not eGames, as we kept saying on the podcast, and they were yelling at the podcast. So, yes. And the fact that there are clubs already involved
already
in eSports.
I know. Here's us with our radical idea to have teams enter players into eSports. Hang on, eSports or eGames? What's it called?
eSports.
Okay.
Not EA, EB Sports.
Or EA Sports.
Place where you buy video games.
It's in the game. The Collingwood Essendon game was an absolute cracker. That first three quarters was some of the most exciting football I reckon I've seen this year. I actually was looking at Essendon going, you know what? They are, considering who they had out of that side, because you got the feeling they rested a few players for that game. They were having a real crack. The class of Collingwood obviously caught up with them in the last quarter, but that was as exciting a first three quarters of footy as I've seen this year.
Yeah, Essendon are an enigma. I have no idea what to think about Essendon, because there's just a part of it that works. When it works, you go, oh yeah, I can see how this works. But when it doesn't work, it looks terrible and it looks like you could never get it to work. So it's just, I find it very hard to get a read on what they seem to me to be the most likely team to be just bundled out in the first week. And that'll be the end of their season. But there's just this other bit of them that you're like, well, if it all comes together at the one time, they could, you know, worry teams.
You're right. They're enigmatic. They are like their star players. They are like Jake Stringer and Waller. They are mercurial at best.
Yeah. I mean, and they've both had really great seasons, which I guess is why Essendon are in the finals, right? Like, despite the fact that they are erratic, they still manage to make the finals of the competition. So they've obviously had some kind of okay season, particularly because they've had a bunch of injuries and stuff. Mm. But you're right. When they're good, they're almost irresistible. Like, you know, Stringer's like that and Tippin Woody's like that. And when they're not, they just look like it doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they looked really good for the first quarter. They got like, I think they kicked the first six goals of the first quarter. And I was like, holy shit, like Essendon, maybe they've been foxing us this whole time. It is weird. All this pressure on John Worsfold, you know, there's even talk of Ross Lyon going to Essendon, which again, Ross don't do rebuilds. Makes sense that he would go to the Bombers. But you got to wonder, like, I mean, is it more the the expectation of Bombers fans. Like, they are a notoriously demanding group of supporters. Like, yes, they had to stomach the drug saga because they had no other choice. Like, they couldn't, they just had to endure that. But, you know, for, if you look at a club like Essendon, Carlton, you know, they had those sanctions and it's taken them bloody 20 years to recover. Essendon, a 5-year recovery period is not fast enough as far as they're concerned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have a very powerful ex-players and coterie and all that sort of stuff. You always
word,
hear about that.
What is coterie group? What does that mean, coterie? I always think like coterie is like a, an, like, is that an RSL, a group of women at an RSL who knit? Isn't that a coterie
yes,
group?
Yeah, they have a very powerful group of women at RSL who knit at Essendon. And they've been... I mean, it's the second time that Needles offside have got them in trouble. But it's a... I don't know exactly what a coterie is. A supporters group. Some sort of supporters group, like the Essendonians or something.
All right, here we go. Michael's thrown up a definition. Coterie, a small group of people with a shared interest or taste, especially one that is exclusive of other people. Right, okay. So you'd imagine at every club there is a small group of very powerful backers, you know, captains of industry, men and women who are well-funded and well-connected.
Do you think that this is... Where does this fit into your sort of structure of your... Like, you know, because your club will have... various levels. So you have your, like, your board, right? Which is your official, like, highest level at the club, right? Who aren't, you know, employed day to day by the club. So take out the people who are employed day to day by the club. We're talking about these sort of supporter groups. And so the board is your top power.
Yep.
Then you have your kind of like top levels of supporters. You're sort of at the Dogs, you know, you have the top Dogs and those sort of things. And then there's like probably, you know, members, you know, members who all get a say at some stage. So where does coteries fit into that? Are they like your top Dogs or are they separate like to the internal structure imposed by the club?
Do you think they're like the deep state of each club? They are the shadowy figures like the Koch brothers behind the scenes, just like pulling the strings, making things happen. They're the real power.
Well, I've never been at a Top Dogs function where somebody suggested we overthrow the board, you know? No one's ever sidled up to me at a Top Dogs function. I don't go to Top Dogs functions. Maybe I'm involved in some sort of coterie group that I don't
so
know.
So you are a Top Dog?
Yeah.
Right. Is that just you buy your way into that?
Yeah, you just buy your way in. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, no. I think that would be separate to the coterie group because... They don't want any riff, and they don't want new money, Will. They don't want any riffraff just joining the coterie group. You want people who are Bulldogs through and through, like stalwarts of the club, long time supporters, you know, people who are Footscray, all that kind of stuff. Because you want to have political influence. You want to be able to influence councils, all that kind of stuff. Hot jam donut vans, moccasin factory, some kind of, you know, all the primary industries of the Western suburbs.
Okay. So you think it's like a secret shadowy organization? Like,
yeah, is Franco
like
Cozzo...
that Netflix documentary, The Family? Like, it's a secret organization that's infiltrated, like the club that sort of secretly controls things behind the scenes.
Is Franco Cozzo involved with the Bulldogs?
What? Because he said Footscray in his ad on TV.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he's just such a Western suburbs identity.
I don't think so. I don't know who Franco Cozzo married for.
It'd be Essendon or the Dogs, you'd think, right? Is Franco Cozzo still alive?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's absolutely still alive.
Yeah. We should point out, is John English. We had a lot of people contact us after we talked about Tim English and, of course, his dad being John English, who informed us that John English, the star of the Pirates of the Penzance and All Together Now, had passed away. As it turns out, Tim English's father is also called John English and he's very much alive. So we were right.
Yeah, but John English, the singer, still dead. I do need to confirm that. Because you did start this thing by saying John English is alive. So I didn't want you to shock anybody who had not heard that in context. Here we go. Here's an article from, I'm going to say this is probably from 2016, if I had to have a guess, but just because of the nature of it. But I cannot, here we go. Oh, yep. There we go. September 26th. 2016. Franco Cozzo goes Foots crazy for Western Bulldogs.
Ah, fantastic.
Furniture King Franco Cozzo is
grand
going...
Grand sale.
It's going foots crazy. The Melbourne Identity, known for his chain of furniture stores and memorable pronunciation of footus cray, is well and truly on the Bulldogs bandwagon ahead of Saturday's grand final. Mr. Cozzo posted a video on his Facebook page yesterday from one of his furniture showrooms, delighted that the Western Bulldogs had made it to the final hurdle. Western Bulldogs, you are the champion. You going to win for sure, he exclaimed, before finishing with a jubilant, come on, footus cray. The video has been seen by, Mr. Cozzo is the latest celebrity to get behind the Bulldogs, with Thor star Chris Hemsworth also declaring his support.
From Thor to Franco Cozzo.
There you go.
With a Will Anderson in between. Yeah. Where you somehow fit on that Venn diagram, like in between Chris Hemsworth and Franco Cozzo is a Will Anderson.
Yeah, so I guess that's what the secret coterie group would be. Yes. It'd be like, that's what it is. It's like Chris Hemsworth, it's prominent supporters.
Yeah.
So it's Chris Hemsworth, Shane Delia.
Yeah.
Julia
Gillard.
Myself, Julia Gillard. Oh, she brings a bit of shadowy political power to the board. That's good, actually. Oh,
and the dude from Hunters and Collectors, he's a Bulldog supporter too.
Mark Seymour. That's good. Yeah. Great.
I mean, literally the composer of the unofficial grand final anthem, right?
Holy Grail. Yeah. Danny McGinley. The Bulldogs bannerman, Danny McGinley.
Well, I mean, power brokers. Maybe he's the court jester in your seat of power.
I mean, everybody needs a gopher. Do you know what I mean? Everyone needs someone to get in early and whack the urns on.
He speaks
every
truth
shadowy,
to power.
Shadowy government needs a gopher.
I actually heard that they approached Chris Hemsworth about having a more official, not official, but like, would you like more involvement in the club? And he was too busy. Didn't feel like he could properly support and promote the club in the way he would like to.
He made $110 million last year.
Yeah, he could buy the club if he wanted.
Yeah.
He could buy the club. I mean, we talk about moving the Gold Coast to Byron Bay, but what if... He's so rich. He's like, the Bulldogs are my team. I love watching them play. I'm going to move them to Byron so I can watch them play every Saturday. They can play in my backyard. Bulldogs. I've had a full-sized AFL oval built in my backyard. I want the Byron. Byron Bay Bulldogs has a great ring to it.
It has a great ring to it. You chuck in the Gold Coast. The Bulldogs do a deal. So we play half of our games in Melbourne still. And we play half. Oh, no. We play half of our home games out of Byron Bay. Like we do with Ballarat. It's kind of like our Ballarat deal. Yeah. So we don't play every weekend out of like Byron Bay, but we play like four games a year or whatever out of Byron. We play the smaller teams, you know, out of Byron Bay. Everyone stays at Chris Hemsworth's house because there's enough rooms. There's a gym. There's a sauna. It's actually got better facilities than the actual Bulldogs rooms.
I could see that. If Chris Hemsworth wanted to be on the board, do you think they would give him a seat?
Yeah, absolutely they would give him a seat. I think, they, you know, when you're saying they want him further involved in the club, if a guy's made $110 million in a year, of course you do. He could be our Russell Crowe, you know.
Right.
He could be... The Bulldogs need, like, a wealthy benefactor.
Yeah.
If he wanted to be the Bulldogs... If your wealthy benefactor was a dude who's as good fun as Chris Hemsworth is and is, you know, is lovely and charming and, you know, what a great role model and... Yeah, super. He's funny and he's super handsome and
Although
the Bulldogs have never
didn't they?
Like,
didn't he
Charlie,
do some?
We're getting Franco Cozzo to do his videos. Ernie Sigley was our most prominent supporter for years. Russell Gilbert's not feeling as well as he used to. There is a massive promotional hole that we have ready for Thor, and he's $110 million a year.
Didn't they? I saw it was a few weeks ago now, but wasn't there a game on the Gold Coast that Chris went to with his kids and he like took photos of the Gold Coast players and stuff?
Yeah, that's all right.
Is there any not concerned that they're going to poach him?
He's a Bulldog through and through, mate. Born and bred. Yeah. Family connection. No.
His dad played some games, did he?
I believe so. Yeah, there's definitely a family connection.
Yeah. I mean, they should really like... Okay, so Hemsworth's like, I want to sit on the board. I want to move you to Byron Bay. Where do they draw the line? At what point do you say, hang on, this is a bit like that kid in that episode of Twilight Zone. You don't get everything you want, Chris. Like,
you,
where
do you... Well, you keep asking me questions and I'll tell you if we would grant them to him.
All right. So he wants you to play 6 games a year at a Byron Bay.
What's the capacity of the ground there at Byron Bay?
Let's say 10,000 boutique.
Okay. Well, and yeah, all right. 10,000. What sort of investment is he putting into the club? Because we're going to have to obviously, you know, we're going to have to fund this. And if he wants it to happen,
you'll get 5 million a year.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Done. You know,
just under a million per game.
Byron Bay. I mean, don't you think we could attract better players to the club if one of the offers was, A, you'll get to meet Thor, and B, we play 6 of our home games at Byron Bay. Do you like Byron Bay? The greatest place in Australia? Well, we play 6 home games a year out of Byron Bay.
All right. So then he wants to...
At 3-quarter time, our runners bring out kombucha. We play out of Byron Bay.
He wants to be guaranteed to be in the starting 18 for at least 1 game a year.
One actual season, or can it be pre-season?
No, actual season.
In the 18, on the field?
Yeah. You don't have to play him for longer than, say, 10 minutes, but he starts on the ground in 1 game.
Yeah. Look, to be honest,
he's like, fit.
We're undersized.
Yeah.
Like, if we had somebody that we needed to kind of get a tall in for... Like, you know,
and you can pick the game. So you could be playing the Gold Coast. So he doesn't have to travel too far. He could train at home at his gym.
I mean, to be honest, he's in much better nick than a lot of our players. Like, the Bulldogs are great, but they're a young team and a lot of them just look like teenagers. Like, they have the body build of, like, you know, fit teenagers rather than grown men. He would actually look like, if you had all the players out there, and you had Chris Hemsworth amongst them in a Bulldogs jersey, and you asked somebody who did not know who any of those people were to identify the one that wasn't a footballer,
yeah,
he would not be anywhere near the first one that you went to. Like, he would probably go top 5 of most likely footballers out of that list.
He wants to play 5 minutes of a final. Doesn't have to start on the ground, but he wants to play 5 minutes of a final. Think about it, because you could be like 6 goals up against the Pies or something like that, and you just throw Chris on into the ruck. Is this all? This is where you draw the line. He's giving you $5 million a year.
Yeah.
All he wants is to play 5 minutes. The guy's still fit.
In a final. No, 5 in a final. He needs to give us $10 million a year. I'm not saying it's not for sale, but I've got to renegotiate the price. $10 million a year and you can play 5 minutes in a final.
All right. Okay. He doesn't have to play in a final, but he plays 1 home and away game for the year for 10 minutes and his brother Luke gets 5 minutes in another home and away game. Not Liam, Luke.
Are you settled on not Liam? Because... we're willing to negotiate for Liam. I just feel like Luke, now he's taken the piss.
The Byron Bay Bulldogs. Should we look ahead to the finals and make our... well, maybe we should just do a quick assessment of the teams that got bundled out.
That's a good idea. Just look at should we have a look at the All-Australian squad quickly as well?
Oh, yeah, cool.
Do you have time?
I've got
time today if you've got time.
Yep. Well, you bring all Australian squad. I'll bring up the ladder. How does that sound?
Good. And actually, just while we're doing this, I might just quickly go to the bathroom if we're going to
All right, we'll take a little break. So we're back. All right, so we're going to do a quick look at the teams that didn't make finals before we look at the All-Australian squad, have a look at next week's games, and then wrap up. Okay, starting at the bottom. Gold Coast Suns. They finished off the year with 18 losses in a row.
Started at the bottom, now we're here. At the bottom still.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have no joy in what's going on. I would like AFL to be the most popular sport in the country and dominate in every state, but what the fuck do you do? What do you do? I mean, does it remind you of Brisbane in the 90s, the Bears?
You know what? And Brisbane in the 90s remind me of Brisbane in the 70s. They've got to just rebuild. If they're going to keep on the Gold Coast, and they are, so they've just got to get it all in place and rebuild it properly and get these high picks and hopefully trade them out for some good experienced players. And this idea of, like, you know, getting some champion players who are near the end but still have some good football in them is probably the best thing to do. And they've just got to rebuild and have faith in Stuart Dew and what they're putting around them and institute their plan for every Monday being a Mad Monday. And I think they're onto a winning formula.
Melbourne, terrible season, lost their last 5 games in a row. Looks like Nathan Jones will probably retire at the end of the year. Disaster.
Disaster. Everything I could have dreamed from Melbourne's season. Just absolutely spectacular implosion. Beyond actually even... like, it's watching Melbourne this year felt like when I went and watched Avengers Endgame. I was just like, well, just everything that I wanted to happen, happened. And some of those things I didn't know that I wanted, but when they happened, I was like, yes, this is what I wanted. Like, the only player that I really love at Melbourne is Max Gawn. Gawn had a standout season, or probably be all Australian. So Max didn't get hurt. Max didn't die. My favourite character didn't die, Charlie. There was a massive red wedding, but my favourite character survived.
Carlton finished the year pretty well. They won 2 out of their last 5 games, but all the talk was about Carlton. There seems to be a lot of excitement. I mean, I don't know if it's just people are just tired of Carlton being shit, but there seems to be a lot of optimism about their future. They got spanked by Geelong at GMHBA, but who doesn't?
You've got to wonder with... Carlton, to me, could go 2 ways. Mm. Carlton's either back... and they're on their way, and watch out, everybody, because here comes Carlton. Or Carlton is like Sony taking Spider-Man back from Marvel. You know, in that they think that they've got it now. They think that they're up to speed. They think they're ready to go. But when they're left to their own devices, they're going to fuck it up again. And I'm still not sure which way it's going to go.
Are you going to do like some kind of superhero analogy for each of these teams? I'd like to challenge you.
I am. Actually, okay. You know what? All right. Yeah, okay. And okay. Gold Coast is one of those Netflix series that got cancelled. Gold Coast is Iron Fist.
The Sydney Swans finish off the year with a couple of good wins, send off some champions. Who knows what's going to happen with Buddy next year? He still looked good. I mean, maybe the Jack Stephen rule with Buddy, and it's just like, don't train, eat pies, and just turn up 6 games a year and do your thing.
Yeah, Buddy looked good enough in his 300th, didn't he, that he felt like he had a couple of seasons left in him. What is Sydney when it comes to superheroes? There's someone who's been a consistently successful superhero, but now is kind of stepping out of the spotlight.
Captain America.
Yeah, maybe they're Captain America. That's what they are. They're still admired. Everybody's just like, yeah, no, we admire you. They went out with some grace. Their aged champions went out like Captain America at the end of Endgame.
The Saints finished the year under Brett Ratten with 3 wins and 3 losses. Going to go pretty hard in the recruiting period, you would think. Need to get some skillful players in and need some of these draft picks from last year. Our top 2 draft picks, Jack Bytel and Max King, didn't play at all this year. So next year you'd want to get some games into them.
They are...
tough old year.
What's Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson? Black Widow. That's exactly what they are. They are so Black Widow. They've always got new haircuts. They always look the part. You're glad they're there, but they haven't got that lucrative solo project up yet. You know, they have some starring moments. Always good to have them as part of the team and the competition, but yeah, very Black Widow.
Fremantle finished on disappointing 3 losses and sacked their coach, and looks like there's going to be an exodus of players.
So, interesting times for Fremantle. Fremantle to me are, what are they? It's a kind of a, you know what Fremantle are? They're Shield.
Right.
They've had like a Nick Fury type, you know, grumpy commander. Yeah. Constantly plotting behind the scenes, but it turns out he's been infiltrated by Hydra, and there's been some sort of overthrow of S.H.I.E.L.D. and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s fallen apart. That's what it feels like.
North Melbourne, pretty good win. They had.
By the way, this is what Caro and Robbo and those guys do on their podcast, right?
North Melbourne finished with 3 out of 5 wins. Ben Brown just missed out on the Coleman. You've got to wonder where North Melbourne are at, don't you? Because they sort of topped up with some trades last year, like Pollock and that goth kid with his tattoos. but they didn't really seem, they didn't go up the ladder at all this year. They sacked their coach as well. They've appointed a very young guy. Surprised that Richo went to Melbourne instead of North Melbourne. You would have thought Reece Shaw would have been the perfect guy to get an overseer. But what do you think about North?
There's talk that Higgins, you know, Higgins to Geelong, which yeah. I can see is good for them. That makes a lot of sense for Geelong. But, geez, North Melbourne wouldn't want to lose Higgins. No. I'd love to see Higgins come back to the Bulldogs. If he had any romantic notion of coming back to the Bulldogs and playing at the Bulldogs at the end, he'd be fantastic, Higgins, to have. I was always a great fan of him as a player.
Yeah.
North Melbourne or Hawkeye?
Yeah, exactly.
They have no special powers that you can really identify, but good member of the team. Hawkeye, of the all the Avengers, it's shin bonus spirit. That's what Hawkeye's all about, you know, is shin bonus spirit.
Adelaide Crows, terrible end to the year. Terrible year, really. Only won one of their last 5 games. Just like Freo, there seems to be a bunch of players who want out. I think 6 on last discussion that were wanting to get out of there. So maybe lose their coach even. I mean, I don't know. Adelaide Press and the Adelaide public seem pretty even-minded when it comes to poor performances, don't they? They're not going to be calling for blood.
I mean, they are just, that town loves football so much, and the fact that both of their teams didn't make the finals, and they probably both had reasonable cases that they could have made the finals, and the expectations over there would have been that both of their teams would have made the finals. So now Adelaide's a really disappointing end to the year. There's trouble at Adelaide. Adelaide are the Fantastic Four. They look good on paper, but you know, when you just see them all together, it doesn't quite work.
Port Adelaide, not a bad finish of the year. 3 out of the last 5 games, had a couple of really good wins and then just an unfathomable loss in the second to last round that ruled them out of finals.
But that's very Port Adelaide. It's very on brand. But it looks, to me, it feels like they're going in the right direction. They feel like one of those clubs that the young players are really good. It's not the older generation that is going to get them success. It's that next generation of people that they're putting through now. So they feel to me like one of those TV reboots of the DC series. So they're like The Flash.
Yeah. Do you think there's any danger of Ken Hinckley getting sacked?
No. I think they'll give him another season. He might get sacked at the end of next season if they don't make finals, I would say. But I reckon he gets one more season.
And so what Marvel superhero did you say they were?
I said they were DC. They were like the DC TV reboot, The Flash. You know, like it's pitched at a younger market, but it's not great. Like, it's not great by any standards. It's not consistent even. But the truth of it is that the good episodes are good, and you're like, this is not bad.
And then finally, Hawthorn, who we talked about before, very strong finish to the year, winning their last 3 games in a row.
Yes. Well, who are Hawthorn when it comes Iron to Man. Their... Yeah, I guess
they started right? this whole shit. They'll be there.
Yeah, except they're not going anywhere. Iron Man's gone. Like, yeah, they're suppose. Not going anywhere.
Thor.
No, they're Batman. Like, you know they'll just reboot it. Like, even when one Batman's over, another Batman will step up in Batman's place. There's never not going to be a Batman, and there's never not going to be a Hawthorn.
All right, do you want to go through the All-Australian team?
Yeah, I'll run you through it right now. Okay. All-Australian. So I'll go through in alphabetical order because that's how it is on afl.com.au.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Have you actually looked at the squad?
No, I don't know.
Not at all?
No.
Okay, great. What we're going to do, if you've got the time, is that I'll go through the clubs and I'll tell you how many players they've got in the All-Australian squad and you try to guess, see if you can guess who the players are.
Mate, you could tell me who the players' names are and I'd have trouble guessing what club they played for.
These are the best play. Let's see how you go.
Okay.
And I'll give some clues along the way.
Okay.
I'll give you clues.
Okay.
So Adelaide had one player make the All-Australian squad. He has been a previous All-Australian in 2014 and 2016.
Is he a Crouch brother?
Defender. Sorry?
A no, Crouch he's a defender. Brother? Rory Laird.
And he is hated by the Western Bulldogs.
Oh, what was that guy? The guy gave his brother Ninfo.
That is him. You're talking about the right guy.
Yeah.
His name is Daniel Talia.
Daniel Talia, that's it. I would never have got that.
Okay. All right. I reckon you would do better at Brisbane. You've watched more Brisbane games.
Okay.
So Brisbane have, Brisbane have five players in the All-Australian squad.
Dane Zorko
is one of them, yes. Correct.
Charlie Cameron
is one of them, correct.
Harris Andrews?
Is one of them, correct.
That's from Brisbane. Oh, Lucky Neal.
And the other one is a young player who's just kind of, he's played 21 games.
Hugh McLuggage,
absolutely. Well done. That was 5 from 5.
Pretty good. Clearly, I've seen more Brisbane games than Adelaide games this year.
Carlton have one.
Patrick Cripps.
Levi Casbolt. Patrick Cripps is correct. Collingwood have three.
Pendles didn't make it. I know that was a controversial omission.
No, he did. Pendles did make it.
He did? Oh, this is the squad.
Yeah, the squad.
Okay. Pendles?
The team hasn't come out yet, has it?
I don't think so. I don't know. No, they announced
it. I don't think so. I think the team's out tomorrow.
Okay, so Pendles is in. Would Steele Sidebottom be in?
No.
Brody Grundy,
no,
though.
Brody Grundy, yes.
Brody Grundy and Mason Cox.
Adam Treloar is the final. Fremantle have two. Should be pretty easy.
Nat Fife. Yep. And not Aaron Sanderlands, surely. No. Bradley Hill?
No. Stephen Hill. He was a surprise omission from the squad.
Oh, okay. So Nat Fife and David Mundy.
No. Think of goals after the siren.
Isn't that his name? Isn't David Mundy kicks the goals after the siren, doesn't he?
Think rhymes with Michael Walters.
Michael Walters. David Mundy is the goal after the siren guy. That's the terrible clue.
No. This season, Michael Walters, very famously won a couple of games after the siren.
Yeah, but prior to that, David Mundy against Richmond a couple of times.
Yeah, but the All-Australian's not picked on prior to that. It's okay. Well, it is, I guess. All right. But Geelong have six All-Australian squad members.
Okay, so Paddy would be in there.
Correct.
Rhys Stanley. Paddy Dangerfield. Stewart, would he be in there?
Yes.
Tom Hawkins wouldn't be, would he?
He is.
I can never tell because the scuttlebutt with Tom Hawkins is he's always having the worst season or the best season ever. I can never work out where it is. Okay, so Tom Hawkins is in. That's three. Is there another one of their dynamic trio, the Ablett? Is Ablett in?
Ablett is.
Yes. Is Joel Selwood in?
No Selwood. Ooh. You're missing a pretty obvious one.
Out of Geelong.
Might not be playing for Geelong next year.
Oh, Tim Kelly. Thank you.
Yes. Greater Western Sydney, two.
Would be Jeremy Cameron.
Yes.
And is it a player who's currently under trade talk?
No, but it's a player who, this is a joke that I don't enjoy making, but it's a player who probably can't talk.
He's mute? Barry Mute?
His larynx has been crushed. His esophagus or whatever it was. His esophagus?
Hain? No.
Hain. Yeah. Nick Haynes.
Yeah. Okay.
Hawthorn have one member of the All-Australian squad.
Lee Matthews.
I'm surprised to see this. I didn't realise he'd had quite this good a season. I didn't realise he'd sort of had the best
Torpedo?
Season. Torpedo? Of the Hawks. No.
Isaac Smith?
No.
Jack Gunston?
No.
Is it Ben Stratton?
No.
Is it someone that I should know?
Yes.
Is he a premiership player?
Yeah, that's a good clue.
Ah, yeah, James Sicily. That's a good clue.
I thought
Mike
that was
Al.
Too obvious. Yeah, everyone hates him is the clue. Melbourne have one.
Max Gawn.
North Melbourne have two.
Ben Brown.
Yes.
And Sean Higgins.
No, the other one is
Ben Cunnington.
Yeah, he's not aware at this stage that he's been nominated for the All-Australian team. Port Adelaide have won.
Who would you nominate from Port? Robbie Gray?
You're in the right zone, but you've gone the wrong one.
Ollie Wines.
Oh, no. I think a bit more like your Robbie Gray.
Brad Ebert?
Former captain of the team.
Broadman? I don't know. Just tell me.
Troy Broadman. Yes. Yes, Troy. It's their famous Port Adelaide player, Troy Broadman. Definitely not Travis Boak, their
That's
former
what I meant.
Captain.
Troy Broadman.
The Tigers have four.
Dustin Martin,
who might win the Brownlow.
Dylan Grimes.
Correct.
Who else would they have? Who's had a good year? Is it Shane Edwards? Shane Edwards, who was All Australian last year?
Shane Edwards hasn't. One of them has had an All Australian year, despite the fact that for much of it they weren't allowed to drink refreshments or eat food.
Billy Fasting.
Sorry, Basha Hooley. That was a bad clue. I was talking about, like, I
Ramadan.
Just am always fascinated by what he does at Ramadan.
Tom Lynch.
No, I thought it was Tom Lynch, probably a bit unlucky not to make the squad. I would have thought he's almost had an All-Australian season. But no, played for another club, though. Did come from another club.
Josh Caddy?
No.
I don't know. Oh, little Dion Prestia.
Dion at Prestia is correct.
Meatball.
Sydney, the Sydney Swans, who you saw on the weekend, had one All-Australian. One All-Australian representative. Who is it?
And it wasn't Jake Lloyd. It was Dane Rampey.
Yeah, the other Jake Lloyd.
Yeah. I should say, I was at the airport a couple of weeks ago and I saw the Sydney Swans guys all milling about in the lounge waiting for their flight. And so I texted both Will and Adam Spencer to say, hey, I'm looking at the Swans players and I still cannot tell which one is Jake Lloyd. And you and Adam both responded with the exact same text is, look for the guy with the mustache, not Dane Rampey.
The West Coast Eagles, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven entries in the All-Australian 40 West Coast.
Okay, McGovern.
McGovern, yes.
Yo,
yes.
Who's the guy who's not Gaff, but is good? Shuey.
Shuey's had a good season. Yep, Shuey.
Who else would there be? Jack Darling's had a good year.
Jack Darling has had an All-Australian squad year. He is in it. You still 1, 2, 3.
Three.
You still got three left.
Shit, that's so many. Is there a Shannon Hearn? Is that the
Shannon
captain?
Hearn?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is he the captain?
Yes.
Shannon Hearn? Are they defenders or midfielders? Give me some positions.
There's a defender and a midfielder.
Is Andrew Gaff in there?
Yes.
Okay, and then there's just a defender I've got to tick off.
A defender who did not play in the grand final last year.
I don't know. Brett Heady.
Brad Shepherd. The Western Bulldogs have three.
Bontempelli, Dunkley, yep. McLean.
McCrae is his name, but apart from that. No, well, we do have a McLean, but
right.
I think you were thinking of McCrae.
Yeah, I was.
There you go. That's
it. All right, well, let's take a quick look at the finals. Now, next week, because it's bye week, we'll do a two guys, one bag episode. So there's a lot of messages on our Facebook page we haven't got to yet. So if you're desperate to send us a question, this is the time to do it, because we'll do a deep dive into the bag next week. But first game, Will, this Thursday. No, what am I talking about? It's not this Thursday. In 2 weeks, Will. West Coast take on the Bombers. West Coast have to win this game, right? Thursday the 5th of September.
Nick Natt will probably play. West Coast will probably be too good. But
yeah,
you never know. It's finals.
I texted my West Coast mate.
But I still think West Coast are one of the big teams that could win it. So I would say West Coast win.
I texted my mate who's a West Coast supporter and said, like, surely you won't lose to the Bombers, surely. And he said he thought that when you played the Bulldogs in 2016. So... there you go, Eagles fans. Before you get too cocky, remember 2016. On Friday the 6th of September, the Cats take on the Pies at the MCG.
Big game, isn't it?
Big game.
It's just a big game. It's like,
and it's hard to determine backs to the wall in this.
No, I think that like Geelong's backs are kind of to the wall. If it had been at GMHBA, maybe Geelong should be fine with it being played at the MCG, and it should have been Collingwood who were lobbying for it to be... Collingwood members going, no, we prefer not to go because we need our backs against the wall way down in Geelong. So
if this was at GMHBA Stadium, I would have zero hesitation in tipping the Pies. Zero.
Yeah.
In fact... if it had turned out that half the team had gastro, the other half the team had been done for some betting scandal, and they were playing their seconds at GMHBA, I would definitely tip the Pies.
I try to keep my two worlds separate from each other. I have a daily radio show where the conversations need to be a little bit more sensible than this. And then, you know, we have this. But I talk about football on both of those shows. And occasionally, I just get it wrong and take an idea that clearly belongs on this podcast onto the airwaves, and the minute I do, I can just see in the look of other people's eyes that I've stepped out of the lane of things they're comfortable with around football. And yesterday I was speculating on the idea that the best solution to the Geelong thing would be to play the first half at Geelong, and then they put all the players on a bus. So you got a full crowd at Geelong. They watch the first half and then they watch the second half on the screen. And you have a full crowd at the MCG and the players have to drive down on buses and then play the second half at the MCG. And I was like, man, just when people are staring at you like, what are you talking about?
Why that would never happen. That is logistically impossible. What are they going to do for that hour and 20 minutes it takes to get down there? And how would you sell tickets to that? Right. Wrong audience.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I was imagining, yeah, the cameras following it like OJ in the Bronco. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's a long highway. You get
Roaming Brian on a bus. Like, it's good stuff.
I love that. I will pick the Pies in that game. They're loading up with a bunch of superstars. Darcy Moore, the big question mark, but I think the Pies for me.
Well, I'm not going to jump off the Cats for the premiership. Picked it early. So I'm going to say if the Bulldogs can't win the whole lot, I'm still on the Cats. And so I say Geelong.
Super Saturday on the 7th of September. There's a lot of S's for you. The Giants host the Bulldogs at a GS Stadium.
So, I mean, I hope the Bulldogs win. I think that the Bulldogs will probably go in favourite to the game. It'll be like, I think it'll be pretty close, but... I think that there'll probably be more support for the Bulldogs from pundits, I reckon, saying that the Bulldogs should win. Mm. I think the Bulldogs should win. Like, I think in the form we're in and coming up against a GWS that has injuries and stuff, but, you know, they could have at their best, they are a team that definitely can beat us. So if they play at their best, then it's going to be tough. Are you doing anything that day?
No, I'm not doing anything.
Do you want to go?
I'm gonna. Oh yeah, you got tickets. You got to call Chris Hemsworth and.
yeah, see if you can I'm getting my coterie group together. Do you want to come and join? It's at the moment. It's just me and you. But if you're in, I've got a coterie.
All right, I'm in.
And then we try to recruit one more person every time we go to the football.
Bulldogs for me in that game, and then the final match of the first round of the finals is the Lions hosting Richmond up at the Gabba. What a great game this will be. 2 weeks break they've had. They sized each other up. Brisbane got to test out the MCG. They lost, but they didn't lose any fans in that process. And now they get to host the Tigers at home. I mean, imagine if they slaughtered them. It would be just throw the finals into a spin.
I think they can win. I definitely think, based on what happened and them being at home, I think that they can win. I don't mind the idea of them winning, because the Bulldogs, if they won, would play whoever loses out of this game. And
Tigers don't like the Bulldogs.
The
Tigers don't like playing the Bulldogs.
Well, that's what I think. And if you're going to beat the Tigers, because I think the Tigers are probably the best team in it at the moment, you're probably better off beating them before it gets to the big day, you know. And yeah, the Bulldogs play pretty well against the Tigers. But I mean, whoever loses this game, if the Bulldogs win, they're going to come up against a very, very good football team. It's a tough side of the draw.
I'm going to pick Brisbane in that game.
I am going to say that Richmond probably win that. But
and if anyone has
I'd
been
like
keeping
to see Brisbane, I really would like it.
Has anyone been keeping track of our tips this year? Can you let us know who won? I'd just be interested to know.
Yeah. What do we do on the weeks where one or the other of us was not here? Does it matter?
It's you always pick the away team.
The away teams. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, in this season, that'll probably be the only rounds we do well.
All right. Like I said, next week we'll just do a mailbag round. So if you want to send us a message, just go to the TOFOP group on... the Two Guys, One Gut page on Facebook. You can also go to TOFOP.com to check out some other podcasts that Will and I do together and separate from each other, truth be told. And I think that's it, really, isn't it?
Yep.
Play on, not 15.
Ball. We are two guys, one cup.